Here's Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686.
I'm very happy to be back from our vacation. I mentioned to you guys I was going on vacation. I did. We took a week and we went to, I got to tell you about this. We went on this Disney cruise. Now, if you think I'm going to spend the next hour bad-mouthing, putting down, bagging on the Disney corporate superstructure, you're wrong. Because even though I've had my run-ins with Disney down through the years, that's been on a professional footing, and I don't want that to contaminate my personal life, so I try to just sneak in under the radar anytime. Like when I go to Disney World, I'm afraid they're going to, "You're Phil Hendry? Well, you can't get in." I actually have that kind of paranoia. Wait a minute, you're the guy who we almost threw out of Disney World that time for doing that soccer game on the radio, and the kid almost pulled the radar, he almost pulled your satellite, and we almost got thrown out of Disney World once for doing a soccer game, which apparently got too loud. The best that I can glean from what happened that day, I was too loud. And we were on the street there in that MGM Studios area. And I guess I was loud because the guy came, "Oh, you know, you've got a tone." And we were using, I think we used the word balls. And I think that's probably what did it. And there were people, I got to tell you something, I am so tired of seeing people in shorts with baby gear and guys in baseball caps wandering through airports. And all of the tourists were wandering by that day because they had just opened up that Twilight Zone Tower of Terror. And I guess I used the word balls a little too loud. And the kid came over and said,
"I'm going to have to pull a satellite now, you, mister. That's all there's to it."
I said, "Well, what are you talking about?"
"Well, you can't say balls."
I said, "Well, maybe you should have checked that out before you brought me to this park to do this broadcast."
"Well, screw it."
And he was on his way over to pull the thing when one of the cooler heads at Disney prevailed. So he had that problem. And I always had a kind of resentful of that. I was always very resentful of some other run-ins that I've had with that corporation. Not that they give a crap. Not that they'd know me to fall over me. But it's just occasionally I did something and somebody from the Disney would call up upset. Like the time we did that fake remote broadcast from Disney World where a kid walked by me and allegedly hit me in the ball sack with a bag of ball bearings, and a lady called, and she called Disney security to make sure that Mr. Hendry would be okay, and Disney said, "There is no Mr. Hendry here in the park," and, well, you can imagine what happened there. But I'm going to tell you something. We went out to Port Canaveral, Florida. We flew into Orlando, and then we went out to the big Disney cruise ship. And you get on, and you got to go into the terminal there, and they got all the Mickey Mouses running around, and Donald Duck, and all those cats, and you're laying all your, getting all your documents signed, sealed, and delivered. Then they give you a little card, and you go on the boat. And we spent like a week with the kids cruising on this Disney cruise ship. They went from Port Canaveral down to the Netherlands Antilles, which is another word for St. Martin's. And then from there we went up to the Virgin Islands, St. Thomas, and then from there we went to this private island that they own. And then from there we came home, and it was a blast. It was cool. I'm being honest with you, and not because it was so kid friendly, but because they had stuff there for adults. They had adult bars, and it may be Disney, man, but you can get pretty rat assed in some of those bars they got on that ship if you want to. And the kids aren't going to go anywhere because where are they going to go? They're on a ship, so they're safe, right? So you're not worried about where they're at because they got these clubs and stuff that they can go into. They got the Mickey pool, which is for the preschoolers. They have the Goofy pool, which is for the kids and the adults. Then they have the Quiet Cove pool, which is strictly for the adults, with two spas and the Signals bar at the end of it. And above that, they have what one of our kids affectionately called the Espen bar. And you go up there, you can smoke a couple of cigars and watch a ball game. All of this while you're on this ship, right? And then you come into the dock, and you dock there in the Antilles, and you go off, and then you have to deal, of course, with the Jamaicans or whatever, the St. Martinesque people, the Caribbean people. And when I say you have to deal with them, I want to be as kind as I can. And for those of you who have never visited the Caribbean, let me warn you. They don't particularly like us. I don't care how many Yaman stories you've been hearing. I don't care about that. Don't worry, be happy. Those cats down there, and I'm talking specifically the black Caribbean people, they don't dig tourists. They may say they do. They may have all those groovy ads you see on TV with the palm trees. And, come on down, man. Yeah, we'll give you a rum runner. Gonna be all right. Don't worry. Be happy. Bull crap. They, you know, I don't care if everything is all right. You know, whatever. They really have got this whole trip, man. It's like an attitude they lay on you that they're doing you a favor. Now, many of you would say, well, they are doing you a favor, Phil. You're in their country. Well, they're doing me a favor. What are you talking about? Because I gave the guy money to give me a cab ride? Who's doing who the favor? I'm not asking anybody to kiss my rear end. I'm not asking them to get down on their hands and knees and be grateful the great white God is there in their country. And by the way, I'm not talking about race now, because they treat the black Americans, they treat even worse than the white ones. Because the white guy, Caribbean guy figures he's got to give me a drink and, you know, serve my white ass, because that's what, you know, that's just kind of how it goes. But when he sees a black guy down there, it's like, I had to serve the white guy. What, I got to serve you, too? You're just like me. And I've talked to more African Americans who've gone to the Caribbean on vacation. They hate it. They can't stand it. They've had the worst time of their life. Now, I know it sounds like I didn't have a good time when we got on the island there. I sort of did. Actually, I had a pretty good time. The cab driver, she was great. Her name was Maria, and I had to tip her, like, I don't know, $100 for a four-mile ride, and that was just fantastic. The part that I didn't like about it was I had to look at all these nude Europeans, and by nude Europeans, I mean white nude Europeans, because they have all of those, what they call, clothing-optional beaches. It's a whole trip about bathing in the nude. Maybe I don't get it, and I'm sure that I don't. I don't understand. I know that people say it feels natural and groovy to run with the breeze blowing through your genitals on the beach. I'm sure it feels marvelous, but it's not anything that guns my engine around strangers, okay? And it could be my very Catholic and American upbringing. But we're on our way over to Marigot, which is this French town on St. Thomas, or on St. Martin's, because Maria and I wanted to get away from the Dutch side because it was loaded with all these tourists. We want to go over there, have some lunch, do a couple of more pops, see what there was to see. But the cab driver, she says, you know, I have to stop. Well, where are you going to stop? I have to stop at the beach here. I have to let the people up. Okay, that's fine. It's Oyster Bay or whatever the hell it's called. It's right over here. So she stops and lets them out. Well, Maria says, well, I'm going to get out and get a bottle of water. So we walk into the cafe there. There's a guy sitting there having his lunch nude. Now, I can dig it on the beach. Are you going to sit down and eat with the guy, you know? And he's got his legs crossed with his sunglasses on. He's having a conversation with who knows who. And he's just stark raving naked. Now, does that make me provincial? Does that make me ashamed of my body? I guess it does. I you know, forgive me. But the whole trip, just if they were nude black people, I think I could have swung with that a little bit better, because it's like their country. But how would you like that? I mean, it's like Miami. You know, they got to allow topless sunbathing in Miami because there's so many krauts coming over, excuse me, Germans, and all these people that must take their clothes off. They simply must. And if you won't let us strip on the beach, we will not come to your country anymore. And so there. And well, all right. Because Miami didn't want to miss out on any of that tourist capital from Europe, so they allow, finally, down there on certain stretches of Miami Beach, if you're a European, but only if you're a European, and can prove it through either a lack of circumcision or your I'm just kidding, you are then allowed to take your clothes off on Miami Beach and these clothing optional beaches. And Disney, you should have heard these guys before we docked. They had this orientation lecture that they gave in the Mickey Mouse Theater, whatever it was there in the bowels of the ship. So I said to Maria, I'm going to go to the orientation. Yes, go and find out what we're up against. Yes, okay. So I go down there like the very responsible husband. I sit down with a notepad, and the cat there is saying, now, folks, let me warn you, there's clothing optional beaches on St. Martin. I don't want anybody stumbling into that. But there, the beaches are clothing optional. Now, let me just say this again.
Clothing optional?
That's right. How'd you know?
I don't know. I had a dream the other night that you were going to say that.
Well, let me just repeat myself. Clothing optional.
Now, that means there's no clothes.
That's exactly what it means. No clothes.
All right, I got it.
All right. Now, furthermore, the clothing is optional. Okay. So we got to St. Martin's. We took a catamaran ride over to this beach to snorkel. Man, that was sweet. 50-foot cat. We are all sitting up front, which is called the bow. I learned that being on a ship for a week. We went forward to the bow, and we sat on kind of that mesh that they have on a catamaran. You haven't lived until you've been on a catamaran with 8-foot waves. I'm telling you, in the Caribbean where the water's like 85 degrees. So basically what was happening, we're smashing through these 8-foot waves. The water, which is like bath water, is showering over top of you. And the dudes that were crewing this catamaran are walking, balancing themselves, Craig, with trays full of rum runners and champagne. And didn't spill a drop. I mean, it's just beautiful. And we went over to this beach. The snorkeling wasn't that great, but who was watching that? All the Dutch were down the beach with their clothes off. And then the big thing happened. I got to tell you about this. Some big, tall blonde, who I was sure was a lesbian, she just, it was kind of that scrubbed, no makeup, short hair look, and she was with a girlfriend. She had seen me looking for a towel because my towel got wet, getting doused. Well, she apparently took a liking to me or something. She said, "Do you need a towel? I saw you. Your towel was wet. I have a towel. Would you like one?" I go, "Gee, sure. Thank you. Okay, it's right up here where my stuff is." So we walk up the beach, and, "Gee, thanks a lot. I was really, oh, that's okay. Here, you want a towel? Would you like a cigarette?" "No, no, that's okay." "Well, okay, here's the towel." Well, Maria saw this and got completely freaked. I said, "What's wrong?" She said, "Look at her. She's hitting on you." I said, "Women don't hit on me. Are you nuts? She's a lesbian." "No, she's hitting on you." You know, imagine it's either my naivete or it's Maria's naivete. I don't know what was at work there, but I was absolutely convinced no woman is going to hit on me. And, of course, Craig's asking, was she naked? No. But at that point, I was. Maybe that's why she was hitting on me. I don't know. No, she wasn't naked, but she's saying, "Would you like a towel? Would you like a cigarette? Would you like to have a drink?" Maria said to me, "That broad is hitting on you." I said, "No, she's not." She said, "Yes, she is." "No, she's not. She's a lesbian." "Well, how do you know?" "Look at her. She's got the short hair and the whole, she's a nice lady, but there's no way." "No, I'm telling you, Phil," and she's pissed. Now, this is the same woman, by the way, the woman that I'm married to. This is the same woman who in Cancun, or wherever the hell we were, 6 months ago in Mexico, she's sitting there in a lounge with two gay guys. No problem with that. I got no problem. And their arms are around her, and she's dancing with them. And she spent like 3 hours hanging with these two gay guys. And when I said I didn't think it was appropriate, she's telling me I'm being repressive and the restrictive husband, and why don't I quit on my whole Victorian trip. Now some lesbian offers me a towel, and she's having a freaking baby. How do you figure that? That's the way women are. That's how I figure it. So in other words, she can sit there, and these guys were from San Francisco, nice guys. There's a thing with Marie and I. We befriend gay couples when we're on vacation. We feel sorry for them. You see, two gay guys in a restaurant, like in a hotel down in Mexico, or on this ship, we befriended two more gay guys. And the person's coming around with the camera to take pictures of you, like when you're having dinner. "Oh, a picture of you and your wife?" "Why, sure." And she went up to these two guys. And she said, "Can I take a picture of you?" And I heard the guy say, "Well, yeah, okay." And they stayed in their seat. And this woman, this is a Disney. Now, Disney's pretty hip when it comes to gay people, aren't they? That's what I heard. But then there's probably a whole bunch of gay people that disagree with that. I'm totally unplugged. She said, "No, go ahead, sit next to him." So they sat next to each other, and she took a picture of these guys. Well, that was kind of Maria's cue to swoop in and save the day. So we befriended these guys. Same thing in Mexico. She befriends these guys. She's dancing with them. They have their arms around each other. They've got, they're grabbing each other's asses. It's just a very friendly thing because they're gay. And Phil, why are you upset about it? Now, a kindly lesbian takes pity on me and gives me a towel, and she's having a conniption. And that was just the first hour of our vacation. Back with the rest. Yeah, it's women. In a moment, 1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show.
Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
I'm not the kind of guy that women hit on. I mean, it's happened in my life. Well, let me take it back. Yeah, I suppose that I've been hit on, but I'm not the kind of guy women get aggressive about. They got to get to know me and my bubbly personality. Then they get aggressive and homicidal like my wife almost did on that lesbian, which I still am convinced she was. No, she's a lesbian. No, she's not. So, but she lent me the towel, and they were very nice. And then later on, oh, yeah, then we see him in this, Disney's got this bar on the ship called the Rockin' D Bar, okay? You go in there, no kids allowed. There's a couple of, what's very cool about taking that Disney cruise is they get it about parents. So they keep the kids out of certain areas, and they got a couple of really fairly nice bars, and you can go in there and dance. So anyway, we go in there the other night, I guess it was last Friday, and they got a Gloria Gaynor lip-syncing competition. I Will Survive. That song has been adopted by just about every woman that ever danced in her life. You know, I will survive. This is it. I will survive. You know, what are you surviving, man? You know, I know it's, I realize it's been tough, but what exactly are you surviving? And of course, I remember George Wallace's great joke, George Wallace, the comedian, not the governor, although the governor might have said it. He says, you know that song, Gloria Gaynor, I Will Survive? Whatever happened to her? All right, so Maria placed second in the Gloria Gaynor lip-syncing competition because they picked her off the dance floor. I guess she was shaking her ass, and she looked fantastic. And come on up, baby. We want you to be in this Gloria Gaynor I Will Survive lip-syncing competition. So she gets up there, puts on a feathered boa, and goes to town. You know, and you're hearing the tune. And how many times have you heard that song now? It's just a staple on every disco night on the radio. And she did pretty good. I mean, I was, you know, like cheering. And then they brought out two fat women from New Jersey, and that was the end of the competition. Then they had this, I swear to God, they were a couple of fat women from New Jersey, and they had a applause-o-meter, kind of a phony baloney thing. Well, we'll judge just to see who gets the most applause. And for some reason, this one fat chick, well, maybe it was because she had large breasts, but she won. And Maria came in second. And so for the rest of this cruise, there's people coming up to her, total strangers. You won. I voted for you. You won. You were it, man. Anyway, the whole thing was pretty cool. Then we got over to St. John's. We went and did some more snorkeling and talking about island time. And, you know, these guys saying, hey, you want to know what island time is, man? It took us 4 years to build a Wendy's over here in the Virgin Islands. It took 4 years for them to build Walt Disney World. That's island time. I said, that's great. Okay, so in other words, what it means is I won't get any food for a half hour, pretty much. Okay, just so I know, if I go into a restaurant and I want a beer, I hope I'm not being, I don't want anybody to misinterpret me, but I'm telling you right now, the black folks in the Caribbean, the bartenders, the waitresses, the service people, either they don't like us or that's just the sort of don't worry, be happy thing they do, but they got a real attitude, man, a real freaking attitude. And I started to throw it back a little bit. It happened to me in France, and it happened to me again in the Caribbean. When I started getting a little bit too much of the frogs telling me all about how you just better speak some French here, pal, and this is Paris, and we are France, we are Charlie, we're it. I just started throwing it back in their face, and I started throwing some of this attitude back at this, like this bartender in on the Virgin Islands who said, my wife asked for a daiquiri. I don't make daiquiri. I said, well, I tell you what, if I tell you how to make it, why don't you make it? I don't make a daiquiri. I said, you mean you can't pour rum and whatever the hell else is in it, I forget, into a thing? And the guy, he and I started, like, glaring each other down. I'd had it. I just had it, man. Look, Hawaii is better. Mexico's better. I don't need to go to the Caribbean. We went there because the kids wanted to go on the cruise. Disney puts off a pretty good little cruise. But as far as stopping on these islands and going in, mon, and having myself a drink, or grooving with the cab drivers, or hanging with the locals, forget it. They're not friendly. They don't particularly want us there. They need the money because the tourist capital is pretty much what fuels the economy, et cetera, et cetera. They can't get their stuff together long enough to put together any kind of an economic community down there. They ought to pull a European Union like they do in Europe, but they don't know how to do that. So they just sit down there pissed off all the time. And we go down there throwing just dump trucks full of money at them, and they're giving you the attitude like, you're a real asshole because you're white. Well, yeah. You know what? You're an asshole. Not because you're black. Because you're Caribbean, or excuse me, Caribbean. Oh, well, I realize I'm getting angry now, aren't I? And all that Mickey Mouse just went just flying right out of me. All that good Mickey Mouse feeling that I had just went sailing out of me when I was thinking about all of those people. But I'm telling you right now, ask any black person from America. Ask any black American who's been to the Caribbean. They'll tell you that story, only multiply it by six. All right, I'll be back with more Ugly American Grousing. Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686.
So we flew into Orlando a week ago Friday. We flew in, and Orlando International Airport has a hotel there. It's the Hyatt, and it's extremely convenient, especially if you're traveling with four kids. And, you know, and you have to wait, as I will tell you in a few minutes, for a plane that's 3 hours late. It's good to go up to the desk and find out they got, like, day rates so you can rent a room for the day, you know what I'm saying? So we flew in, and we got unpacked, and we threw our stuff into this room because the ship wasn't going to leave until the next day. So then the van was going to pick us up and take us out to the ship. So we got about 14 hours, whatever, to kill. So we got a van to take us to downtown Disney, which is down south of the city there. And I got in the van. This is a strange thing. I don't know why I bring it up, only to say it was very odd the way this cab driver reacted to me. In other words, I got into the van, I sat down. I'm not a TV personality. I'm a radio personality. People don't see me and say, oh, hi, you're the guy on the radio, right? Yeah. They don't do that. And, thank God. But anyway, we got into the cab and we're driving, and the guy turns to me at one point and says, I hope I don't hear any of these stories on the radio. And I'm like, well, it's, no, of course not. You know, gee, that's, I wonder if Maria said something to him. So we're driving along, and I said, oh, you're listening to a Real Radio, which is our affiliate in Orlando. And he says, yeah, yeah. I said, well, what's their lineup there? Well, he says, well, this guy and that guy and this guy, and you're on at 11, and then another guy. So I got out of the cab, and I said, did you tell him what I did for a living? I said this to my wife. She goes, nope. I said to the kids, did you tell the guy? No. He, in other words, knew who I was, but he was noncommittal. Both ways. Unlike Mike, when he was working at Costco, Eddie Van Halen was there getting potato chips, and Mike threw himself at his feet and offered him oral sex. This guy didn't. I'm kidding. Eddie Van Halen was in line there at Costco at the membership desk. He was getting something, Mike, and you thought about saying something to him, but then you didn't. And that's always, I've done that. I've been walking, I don't know where I was, but Chuck Berry was standing in front of me. And I didn't say a thing, and he was not saying, he was just, we were in a line. I don't know, we were getting into, I think we were at Costco, in fact, waiting to get membership from Mike. So Eddie Van Halen was in front of him, Chuck Berry, then me. And anyway, no, but Chuck Berry, and I could have said, by the way, Chuck, you're fantastic, or I love you, or I don't like black people, or whatever it is that might have come to my mind at that time. Like, could you please stand behind me? I don't like the oil in your hair. Whatever. But I didn't say anything, and because I wanted to be cool. It had nothing to do, in other words, with interfering with him or him intruding on his privacy. Generally, I think people just want to be cool. They want to see if they can do it. Not that that's what this cab driver's dilemma was. I mean, big deal. Here's this loudmouth, and he's in my cab, whatever, you know. But that's what I do, you know. I've done that many times where somebody will walk into the room. Like, I went out on an audition once. And the guy from Talk Soup was in there to audition as well. Naturally, I could have thrown myself at his feet and said, God, you aren't as good as when Craig Kinnear was on the show, but you're really great. But I didn't do that. So anyway, the cab driver was very nice, but we went into this downtown Disney. Now, I got to be very, again, delicate in the way that I put this. Orlando is a big part of my life. I started my radio career there. I fell in love there. I almost got married there. I almost got into my first pair of platform shoes and got into a whole Lynyrd Skynyrd phase there. I almost became a complete devotee of Southern rock, wearing the funky-looking shirts, and I started saying y'all down there, and that's when I got out. So it's a big part of my life, so I say this with great love in my heart when I say there's something in the physiognomy of the Southerner that is different from the rest. It's not the Southerner. I take that back. Anybody that goes, any tourist from back east and down south in the Midwest, it's the physiognomy. Do you know what I mean by that? I mean the physical characteristics. I believe it's a different species. I don't think, in other words, they're as different from us out west as the chimpanzee is from the baboon. In other words, they're both primates, both highly intelligent, but they can't get together. There's no way. So imagine a chimpanzee walking into Baboon Town. You know, there's something wrong here. I don't know what it is. What? What are you talking about? I don't know. You cats have got the big, funny-looking asses and everything. Well, we're both primates, aren't we? Yes, we're primates. I understand. Well, come on. Let's have a cocktail. Yeah, but it's just, I feel wrong. Well, it's the same thing. I'm the chimpanzee, and I walked into Baboon Town down there. There's a difference. We sat down and did the real square old person thing, which all old people do, and that is if there's ever a bandstand set up anywhere with benches, you sit down to listen to whatever crap they're going to shovel out, which is exactly what Marie and I did. Thank you very much. Even though we're in our mid-40s, far from over the hill, we sat and parked it and listened to the band. And it was some kind of a fife and drum corps. When you have a fife and drum corps, let me put it this way. When you have musicians and you have female dancers, do you endeavor to make the female dancers slender and presentable at all? Or, and I shouldn't say that fat girls can't dance, but wouldn't you do that? Wouldn't Disney make some effort to make sure that, well, they didn't do that in this particular case? There were like 20 guys with bugles and trumpets and crap. And then the girls that came dancing out, and I'm telling you, they came out like the Bolshoi Ballet, swirling out 200 to 250 pounds each, and in tight pants, swirling on one foot and doing the whole thing and twirling rifles, you know. And I looked at the kids at one point, and they had the stunned look of someone who's watching like a cow being skinned or something. They just, with the jaw open, you know, the mouth half open and the eyes dilated, just, huh? Like they're watching cows being slaughtered. And then at one point, the kids couldn't take it any longer because one of the girls had her arms up in the air and she had underarm hair, which is, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. It's not usual for America, but she did have pit hair. And one of the kids yelled out, Mach 3! So, which is a razor. Anyway, so we split out of there because it just got too bizarre. But that's when we started rapping about this in the van, and that's when this guy said to me, well, you know, and you're on at 11 o'clock. It's very odd. So we got back and split the next day and went out on the cruise. But the thing with Orlando is, like I said, I started my career down there. I know this town very well. I can hang out with rednecks. Believe me, I can hang with rednecks. I got, many people avoid them. I can hang in a bar with rednecks so long as the conversation doesn't stray away from sports. I can talk any kind of sport with a redneck. I can get enthused about stock car racing. I can, because I watch it. Even though he has the tank top with the baseball cap, all of that stuff, I can do it. But the minute that it starts to get off into family and person, not even politics, I can do that. But when it starts to get off into family, yeah, I tell you, I feel very, very blessed. And then in comes his wife with the, oh, by the way, Mike makes fun of the mullet haircut because he thinks it's so 80s. I saw three of them my first day down there on guys that were 23, 24 years old. The mullet, smoking the Marlboro Reds, and would you like to drink, sir? Probably Budweiser. Okay. And the mullet haircut. Saw that on guys and girls. It ain't out. It's still alive in Central Florida. But all of this that I've just said, I'm telling you, is said with great affection. They're fine people. But I did get out of there just ahead of the whole y'all thing, because now it's very hep to say y'all, and I was saying it like I pulled into a gas station once, just about 3 days before I left town. I said, what would you like, sir? Would y'all fill it? Oh, Jesus. And I put my hand over my mouth. That's when I got out of there. But it was hot, and it was small, and it was too many pine trees. Do you know that in the South there's a lot of pine trees? Even in Florida there's pine trees. Florida's tropical. A pine tree is a thing when it's humid that reminds you of deliverance. And a banjo and a river and a canoe and a pair of underwear tossed by the riverbank. Tossed with abandon on the bank of the river. That's what a pine tree reminds me of. IR Phil Hendry. We'll be right back here on The Phil Hendry Show. We'll be right back.
The Phil Hendry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
Yeah, I was just looking at this, Roger Clinton. You know, what's going on with these siblings and brothers and kids and, you know, of presidents, and what effect it has on the president himself? In other words, you're the president, you're Jimmy Carter, you're Bill Clinton, you're George Bush. Those are the three that I'm thinking of who had significant kid and or brother problems. Now, these guys, I don't care what political persuasion you are. That's not what this is about. What it's about is these guys work their ass off to get to where they are. They worked their ass. They did everything that they could. They achieved the most preeminent, the most powerful position in the world. They became president of the United States. And they got Billy Carter for a brother. Or they got Roger Clinton for a brother. Or they got this Jenna and Barbara Bush. Is that the names of the two girls? And all they're doing is just screwing off because they figure their brother is president. Or their dad's president.
Hey.
Yes, sir.
You know who I am? Well, you're a J.D. right, you do. I want another beer.
Sir, I can't.
I'll tell you right now, my brother is the G.D. President of the United States. He's got his finger on the button, and the missile's pointed at your ass.
Sir, I can't feed you any more beer. Bullcrap.
I want a drink. I want a drink. I'm Jenna Bush. My daddy's president. You got to give me a drink.
People, I think, have asked the question. I know I've asked the question, or maybe nobody's asked the question except me. What was the Secret Service doing, and what exactly is their responsibility? Who cares? That's nothing that I would put those guys in the middle of. But it must be something. You get the phone call. Ring, Mr. President. Yeah, it's your brother. Holy Jesus, I'll put him on. What now, Billy? I know you want to market the Billy beer. Good for you. Roger, what's up? No, you can't come here. No, you can't show them where the button is. No.
I'm going to the missile silo.
You're not going to the missile silo.
I want to.
I didn't say you could if I became president. I said you'd come to the White House. I didn't say you could go to the missile silo and turn the key. Bull crap. Go ahead and tell Mom. I don't care if they don't. Where are you now? You're in a bar. Where? Indianapolis.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what's the problem?
What do you mean,
the people there don't believe that your brother's the president. What do you want me to do? Get on the phone with them?
I don't believe it, so I said I'd show them.
You're not bringing them here to prove to them that I'm the president, and you can't push the red button. Well, you are too. Guy's calling you from like a road stop somewhere, roadhouse. I'm not no more of your friends here, all right? Okay, I've had it with you and your friends. They're not coming over here.
Can I show them with
me? No, you can't show them the Lincoln bedroom, okay? Where are you calling me from? A payphone next to a urinal. It must be a major hassle. So, anyway, we're talking about what? Oh, yeah, Southerners. By the way, there's a couple of great movies to check out. You know of Deliverance, and that is not anything typical of the South, so forget it. The only reason why I'm saying what I'm saying is I spent 6 years of my life in the South. I was in New Orleans. I was in Orlando. I was in Atlanta. I don't count Miami. They say the further south you get, the further north you get. And the further north you get, the further south you get from Miami. So I can't count that town. It's a whole other thing. But, I spent a lot of years there, and when I was back there, I just sort of began to get some of the sensations. Well, let me just put it, as I said to you before, the underwear cast casually on the banks of the river, that pretty much tells the whole story. So we, split from there and got on a ship, and the hello, but coming back on Saturdays, what I wanted to tell you was a nightmare on wheels, because Delta Airlines, hey, 3 hours late, baby. Now, I'm not putting down Delta, it's fine, it happens. They had an equipment problem. And when they say equipment problem, everybody thinks landing gear, don't they? Don't they? I do. What? The plane's late, sir. I'm sorry. We've rescheduled for five. First it was 5:40, right? It's 5:40? Okay, geez. So we got another one of these day rooms in the hotel and put the kids up there because that's what you're going to do. Try to keep them quiet. Kids don't get it. They got a hotel room they can stay in at the airport. Nothing could be more convenient. And if you have to wait 8 hours for a plane at the airport, that's about as comfortable a position as you're going to be in. They don't know that because they're modern kids. Modern kids, they have that stuff. They don't know what it's like sitting in an airport for 8 hours, eating crap out of a vending machine, sleeping on the floor, waiting, praying that your plane gets in. So I would go downstairs, check periodically, what's with the plane? It's been delayed, sir, now to 7:30. Holy jeez, what's the problem? Equipment failure. Okay, are they getting a new... I don't know, sir, don't bug me, okay? It's just whatever it is. All right. So whenever they say equipment failure, naturally you're grateful that they've delayed the flight, and you're hoping they're getting a whole new plane. But I found out they weren't getting a whole new plane. They were on the ground for 4 hours fixing the problem. I said, well, what's the deal? Well, they didn't have the part. What is this? Chief Auto Parts? They might have a Jiffy Lube? They didn't have the part. They had to send out for it? They had to send a guy in a car to go down and get an air cleaner. I don't know what they needed, but... The plane finally arrives, but it was like 3 hours late, and, you know, it was just one of those really, really long days. I ain't going to bitch out the airline, though. Screw it, man. Forget it, okay? Forget with all of that nostalgia about the great days of air travel. Man, I don't remember them. Do you? Your grandma, maybe, when everybody got dressed up and put on a hat and all that. That's not it. They're flying buses. Everybody knows it. I don't expect any more than what I get. I do not expect any more than what I get. I trust the airlines to be unpredictable. I trust that if it says delayed, then that's the way it's going to be. You know, what am I going to do? I'm going to stand there and scream at them? That's always a real good move. Walk up to the desk and scream really loud. That'll make the plane land sooner. Go up to the guy at the counter and say, what? I'm supposed to be in Cleveland at 7. Now, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking they're going to put you on another airline and give you first class to make up for the horrible inconvenience. It ain't going to happen. If everything's sold out, it's sold out. I walked from counter to counter to every airline, and I said, do you guys have anything going to L.A. sooner than 5:40? No, we are booked up. That's what Delta had already told me. But did I believe them? Of course I didn't believe them. My wife said, let's check anyway. They're probably lying. Yeah, all right, so we went to American, I went to United, I went everywhere. Have you got a flight? No, we do not have a flight out, okay? And then Maria says to me, well, if we'd caused a bigger stink. What am I going to say? Caused a bigger stink? Well, what do you mean? Well, if we'd put our foot down and really talk, tell them what? Do you have any seats on this plane? No, we do not. We're sold out. How dare you? I said, do you have any? Well, in that case, yeah, we got 6 in first class. Half fare. What do you want from me? But I saw a guy going ape. Then I saw a woman in a turban. I don't know where she was. She was like from India or something. She's going nuts on this guy. All nationalities going ape on these guys because the plane travel back east over the weekend sucked because the weather back there blows in the summertime. And LaGuardia Airport, you couldn't get in or out of for like hours. So that screws everything up. It's like a domino effect. And meanwhile, back in L.A. where the weather's great, they got an equipment failure. And then, the grooviest part, landing in L.A. on Saturday night, it was like 200 miles of fog. Have you ever landed in fog? You never? You've never experienced quite the thrill, the uncertainty and the thrill of landing in thick fog. Because what it is you're in a cloud, but you know you're only like 10 feet from the ground, but you don't know where the ground is. And you're hoping, you're praying, you're on your knees, you're throwing yourself at the feet of Eddie Van Halen that the pilot does. And you're figuring, he must, this can't be the first time he's done this, you can't see Jack. And finally, I knew we were on the ground when I felt the wheels hit because it was like landing in a cloud. It was a beautiful thing. And we got back to good old California. So that's our vacation. What'd you think of that? It was pretty cool. Oh yeah, and I drank a lot. I forgot, I left that part out. Rum Runners, Bahama Mamas, some big beers in the Espen Bar, and whatever the hell else, that lighter fluid, and Kitty Dukakis showed up. It was great. Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686.